So we're back, but this is our actual last session on logical fallacies. So we've gone over some of the major ones. I know there's more.
Yeah, there are a lot more.
There's a lot more, but just these are the sort of major ones. So the first one is equivocation. So
all right.
What is
now,
equivocation?
In ordinary English, we often use this term to mean somebody's lying.
They equivocate. Okay.
In logic, it's used to mean you have shifted the meaning of a term. And what happens is that you trick maybe yourself and others into thinking that a certain conclusion is reached when in fact you've shifted what you're talking about, and this can sometimes be very subtle and difficult to spot.
Okay.
There's a famous example of this, and I'm going to show it to you.
Okay, so we're going to go over there.
Yeah. This is a proof that God exists, and it was offered by the philosopher and mathematician René Descartes.
Okay.
All right, his first premise is what I'm going to call PSR. That stands for the principle of sufficient reason.
Okay.
All right, and here's what it says. I'm lazy, so I just put the initials down.
That's right.
It says, for everything, there must be a cause or explanation. For everything, there must be a cause or explanation. That's his first premise.
Okay.
All right. Second premise. Causes are always equal to or greater than their effects. This is why there's no perpetual motion machine, for example. Whatever causal energy you put into it, you get either the same out or less.
Or less.
Yeah. So okay. The causes are greater than the effects. They're equal to or greater than. All right. Now, premise three. This is where Descartes is going to grab you, see? There exists in my mind, a backward capital E in logic means exists.
Okay.
There exists in my mind an idea of infinity. Now, I should explain that Descartes doesn't mean something being infinitely big. He means infinitely perfect. So this is the old idea that comes from Plato and Aristotle of something having all the perfections that there are and only the perfections. Then Descartes is calling it an infinite being, infinitely perfect. Whatever is a perfection, this being has it. Infinite goodness, love, justice, mercy, power.
So he
knowledge.
Equivocated in logic terms something right
He's
there.
Going to equivocate with the conclusion. See, now the conclusion is going to be three dots mean therefore. Do you remember that from geometry?
Yeah, I do remember.
Okay, now try to follow this. If there exists in his mind an idea of infinity, according to premise one, it has to have a cause or explanation.
Okay.
You can't say it just popped there all by itself.
So what does PSR stand for again?
For everything there must be a cause
or
explanation.
For everything there must be a cause or explanation.
So there must be a cause or explanation for the idea of infinity in his mind.
Okay.
But causes have to be either equal to or greater than the effect.
Right.
And that means the cause would have to be infinite. So there exists, not in my mind, but there exists an infinite cause of my idea of infinity. And if there's an infinite cause, that means there's something real that has all the perfections there are and only perfections, and that is what we call God, he says.
Right.
That's God. So look at it again. For everything, there must be a cause or explanation, so there must be a cause or explanation for his idea of infinity. The cause has to be at least equal to the effect, so the cause has to be infinite. And there you go. There's an infinite cause of my idea of infinity. Now, the equivocation here is pretty subtle, but watch this. He's claiming that there has to be an infinite cause of this thing here, his idea of infinity.
Right.
But an idea of infinity is not itself infinite.
Right.
Then it doesn't require an infinite
idea
cause.
Of infinity.
That's right. He switched that to infinite idea.
Yeah, right.
If the idea were infinite, it would need an infinite cause. But an idea of infinity isn't infinite. The
right.
idea itself doesn't have all the perfections there are. It doesn't have any.
Right.
Therefore, it doesn't require an infinite cause.
Right, right.
And this goes down the tube. By the way, this was pointed out after he died. He didn't get a chance to fix it or abandon
okay.
it. So,
okay.
But nevertheless, that's a case of an equivocation. You shift idea of infinity into infinite idea.
Infinite.
And then the argument seems to work, but it doesn't.
So now this is heavy-duty philosophy.
Yeah,
right?
This is heavy stuff.
I mean, you had extra. You took this mini-course, you thought, but then you get like a world-class philosopher.
Well, I thought that would be an interesting example.
Yeah, it is.
It isn't an easy example, but it's interesting.
Well, what are some other examples of that might be more...
My head's with the complicated one.
Well, sometimes I've seen it when somebody changes a nuance of a definition. So,
yeah.
like, you know, it's sort of,
yeah.
it's sort of like, or they take a definition that there's, for the purposes of this, I'm going to the old English understanding of this or something. But it shifts things
right.
just a little bit.
And it shifts it. Yeah. And so if the argument depends on the term meaning the same thing,
right.
and it doesn't, then
right.
you don't get a valid conclusion.
Gotcha.
You haven't derived a conclusion legitimately.
Right.
So if I see this again, in this case, even if premise one is true, and we could argue about that, even if premise two is true, and I think it probably is,
mm-hmm.
and even if premise three is true, it does not mean that four conclusion actually follows as required by 1, 2, and 3.
Mm-hmm.
1, 2, and 3 can be perfectly true and 4 is false.
Well, and back to when Descartes wrote this, the scrutiny of whether there is a God or not a God was not on the radar screen like it is today.
No, it was a big deal.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he's one of the guys who helped make it a big deal.
Oh, okay.
He's the first figure in what we call modern philosophy. It's after the Renaissance. He was born in 1595.
So even in those days, like today, that was a big deal?
I
thought like back in the old days it would be
very
like big of a deal.
In fact, he's a Renaissance thinker, so a lot of people are like him in thinking that what came before them is pretty crude compared to what the Renaissance is reviving.
Gotcha.
And he invented analytic geometry.
Okay.
And he invented Cartesian coordinates. And he's one of the brilliant leaders of this new kind of thought. So for him to produce an argument that proves, he thinks, beyond a doubt that God exists, that's a very big deal.
What's
and everybody
problem?
Else, all his contemporaries, either produced a proof themselves or tried to produce a proof that God didn't exist.
Ah.
Or that there could be no proof.
Now, so you in the modern class are covering all this.
Yes. Modern philosophy, we start with the background. Here's the medieval background. This
right.
is what happened in the 16th century. The 16th century is a century of huge turmoil. Everything that everybody thought was an authority they could rely on is being challenged.
Okay.
The Reformation is challenging the church. Democracy is challenging monarchy. Everything that was supposed to be an authority is now up in the air. And so Descartes says, let's start all over about a theory of knowledge, and let's start with what cannot be doubted, what has to be certain.
Right.
And that's where he came up with that famous remark, I think,
therefore
I am. That's one thing I can't doubt that I exist if I think.
Right. And now today that's even been challenged.
That's right. And he wants to take off from there and add other things to it. So by the time he gets to this stage, he's well past that. He's certain that he exists. He's certain that he thinks. And he's certain that there are principles which appear to him to be self-evident, like the principle of sufficient reason, the causal principle, And then he claims he has this idea in his mind of an infinite being.
So
therefore, there must be one.
Here's my question about Descartes. Yeah. How do you react to that? Is that not a proof of God's existence, even though it's somewhat faulty? Would you
prove
God?
Did it?
No.
So his conclusion doesn't follow.
Right.
And so, anyway, I think that's the wrong definition of God. I deny. I know this is really controversial. I deny that the right way to think of God is the being with all and only perfections.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you think God has all the perfections, he doesn't have only perfections.
Yes.
God relates to you and me. That's not a perfection. God forgives us. God rescues and redeems us. Those aren't perfections.
So
God, there's a lot more true of God than just his own personal perfection.
Right. Well, good. Yeah. So let's get back to our subject. The next one's appeal to pity.
Right.
Okay,
you're not really going to make me do this work, are you? I'm old and tired.
Well, in my case, I would.
Yeah.
I have to say, you haven't applied that too much here.
Yeah. That's an appeal to pity.
I see, yeah. Okay.
Or it says, well, you agree with me, don't you? I mean, after all, cut me a break. I need support. That's an appeal to pity. It's appealing to somebody to believe a certain conclusion for some reason other than that it's true. That's what all the fallacies have.
Right, they're always.
You're asking somebody to believe it not because it's true, but because it'll do this.
I've tried and tried, and it's the best I can come up with.
That's right.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah. Appeal to pity. That's interesting. Okay, we have one more. The bandwagon fallacy.
Well, that says, but everybody believes this. We're all agreed now. Don't you agree? And the answer should not be yes, just because everybody else thinks so.
Well, you know, sometimes on juries, as I was a minister of the years, it's hard to be picked on a juror. And some of the jurists that were in various churches of mine talked about having to fight the bandwagon fallacy.
Yeah, that's right.
Because it's like everyone has in certain capital cases, but others there has to be a complete agreement.
Yeah, I got told that once too. Well, we're all agreed, and if you can agree too, then we can all go home.
Right.
Well, that's too. Then get your pillow, because we're saying the bandwagon is not the reason to believe that someone's innocent or guilty or any other conclusion. You don't believe the truth of the conclusion because that's the way the trend is going, and all the in people are agreeing. Those aren't reasons to think something is true. You need the reasons for its truth.
Right. And there's a lot you can do theologically in that. We talked about another class about, you know, science and Genesis and the bandwagon would be in one reading. But then there's another reading that could be true. But in likewise, if another reading became accepted, you'd still have to be careful. Always watch the bandwagon, be convicted, and see the truth for the merits of itself.
Right. Yes, it has to be the truth for reasons.
That's good. Well, you know, we have had a beautiful, fallacies class here, and it's been fun, Dr. Clauser. I always enjoy reviewing them. I remember back when I first started philosophy back in 1980 was when I took my first philosophy class. And I think logic was maybe the first or the second class. I'm not sure. But I remember at times evaluating how many things in my own life I was doing to do logical fallacies without intentionally meaning to do it.
Yeah. Well, that's my reminiscence is a little different. I first taught the course in symbolic logic for Rutgers University in the fall of 1965.
Wow.
That's a long time ago.
So so for all of you, this mini class maybe opened your eyes to a few things, reminded you of a few other things, but hopefully whetted your appetite
to maybe take
logic and learn more and even be more clear about loving others. See, really, in the end, that's what this is about, is we want to be clear, we want to be transparent and honest, and we want our thinking to be clear, and we don't want to manipulate somebody, even unintentionally.
That's right.
So thanks so much, Dr. Clauser, and I'm excited that you get to... I have been excited that you've been at this class, and I really appreciate...
Good to be with you today.
Very good.